that's new. Well, good morning, Covenant Grove. How are you? Oh my gosh, you talk back. I'm so excited about that. My name is Justin, as I was introduced. I am a pastor at a church called Heights in Citrus Heights, California. I am the Life Groups pastor, but like any other pastor, I wear like 14 hats. So I also lead our hospitality team, which is our ushers, greeters, road warriors, prayer team, and then I'm also our young adults pastor. In fact, I'm excited, and they're going to go, dude, you're not going to do this to me, but I'm going to. I have one of my young adults who went to Cuba with me. Her name is Augusta. So please mull her afterwards, chat with her. And I also dragged a friend of mine who I've been mentoring. His name is Timothy, and he is literally my Timothy. Like, you know, when Paul had his Timothy, that's mine. A couple of things you should know about me. I am married. My wife wanted to be here, but was not able to. So she sends her warmest regards. Been married a long time and I'm excited about that. A couple really, really important things. One, I take Jesus very seriously and I do not take myself seriously at all. So I will tell jokes and hopefully you will laugh because I think I'm funny. But again, I don't take myself seriously at all, but I do take Jesus very seriously. And when Serena and I, so I don't know if you guys know how we got connected. Scott brought his team up to Heights Church and we had a chance to sit down and talk. And I have been the Life Groups pastor for going on 9 years now. And I love Life Groups. And so I'm going to totally do a sales pitch for you if you wanted one. But here it is. Life Groups literally changed my life. When I was new to faith, I came to faith October 7th of 1993, fresh out of high school. Please don't do the math. I came up here to Sacramento and a couple years later I was in a group of men, and here's the thing. I was broken and I was struggling with the past brokenness in my life. And one of those things was sexual identity. I was struggling with same-sex attraction and I was terrified to say the truth. I was terrified to say it to anybody. And I went into this life group and I felt God say to me, Justin, you can tell them the truth. And that night I stepped out into it and I told them what was going on in me. And God healed that spot in my heart that night. So I know the power of life groups. Now, it's not because I'm just the life group's pastor that I'm supposed to say those kinds of things, but it's truly, I love my life groups. I love the leaders and the leadership, and I know that there is awesome here because I know the leader of that team. And so when she reached out to me, she said, hey, we're in the series of Luke. And I went, I love the book of Luke. And I love the book of Luke for a couple reasons. One, I have a degree in apologetics because I wanted some questions that I'd had about my faith answered. And not just in a way that was like, you know, just surface level. Like, I wanted the deep answers, and I wanted to be able to help people that I'd talked to how to answer these questions in their own lives. See, a lot of times people hear that word apologetics and they think it's about debate. Well, you're just going to debate people, and it's these big arguments that you make with so-and-so and about this and the existence of God and the reliability of the Bible. And I don't use it that way at all. In fact, what I do is I walk alongside of people and go, here's why our faith is so incredibly phenomenal compared to everything else out there. And the truth is, the book of Luke is, man, I think it's like the gospel apologetic. And here's why I think that is because he is so detail oriented. If you ever notice, he gives you like, and so-and-so had a high fever. So he gives you these details along the way, making the case for Christ to a Roman, to Theophilus. And as you've been listening to this series, I listened to, it's Rochelle, right? Or Rachel? Rachel. Thank you. I'm so sorry, Rachel. I apologize for butchering your name. I listened to Rachel's message last week about inviting, you know, that it's the gospel for the outcasts. And I love that. And the reality is, this week, we're not actually in that. We're in chapter 6, verses 1 through 11, where he's running into some conflict. And Jesus is dealing with this conflict. And I want to talk today about this. I want to talk about, we need healthy rhythms of relationship with Jesus. I have a belief that I've experienced along the way in my life about this book. There's three ideas that I want to kind of share with you and unpack just before I dive into the text. I think there's some approaches that I'll be honest, I've been guilty of doing these myself. The first approach when we step to the Word of God is this. It's the believe right approach. Meaning, if you don't believe exactly the same way that I do about everything, you're wrong. In fact, I've been called a heretic because I disagree on certain issues. Great example of that is women in ministry. We're part of the covenant denomination. We obviously believe in women in ministry. But I've had people call me a heretic because I believe in women in ministry. That's dumb. Don't count those. I've been told that's my catchphrase, by the way, in case you're wondering why I pointed that out. My young adults point out and count every time I say that. But that's the believe right approach to this Bible. And the problem with it is there are things that are secondary and what they call tertiary, third level issues. Women in ministry is a secondary issue. How we govern the church is a secondary issue. There are things that we need to get right. Don't get me wrong. Things like salvation, the person of Jesus, the Trinity, the heart and the message of the teaching of Jesus to us. Man, we need to get that stuff right. So that's not what I'm saying. It's what I'm saying is when the other issues become a problem, but you say, if you don't believe right, you're out. Well, that's not an issue I need to believe right on. The second one is this, and this is the group that we're going to run into today. This is the behave right group of people. They read this book and it's do this, don't do that. It's the to-dos and the to-don'ts, right? It's the long list of you live this way, you don't live that way. You do this thing, you don't do that thing. It gets you on the treadmill of try harder, do better. Ugh. Anybody? Like, that just exhausts my soul thinking about that. But I'm so guilty of it. I fall short and I go, man, I just got to try harder and do better because I need to live right. I need to live right, Jesus. I need to live right. But instead of spending the time with him to let him transform this stuff and this stuff, my thinking and my heart, I just try harder. And I lean into legalism. It happens, right? We've seen people do it. Maybe you've done it. This is Covenant Grove. You guys don't do that kind of stuff here. Heights Church, we do this stuff all the time. We get stuck in these things. The other approach is this, and this is the one that I want to really challenge us because this is the place that healthy rhythms come from. It's from the invitation of friendship and partnership. See, Jesus invites us and God invites us. Like if you, even the opening chapters, God creates the world, creates Adam, and then says, hey, I got a job for you. I want you to be my friend. I want to have connection with you and I have this thing I want you to do. You guys are in this series about reaching the outcast. That's the mission. I love that. Wow, I'm getting really excited. Sorry. I love that that is your driving goal, that that is what the series is that we're talking about, because this is about the friendship piece that I'm going to be talking about today. But then there's also that rhythm of partnership and joining him in the mission that he has before us. That's the invitation. And you can see it again over and over. Abraham, join me. I want to be your friend, Abraham. I want to be your God. And I have this thing for you to do. Isaac, Jacob, David, on and on and on. Friendship and partnership. In the book of Luke, we see this happen. We see this confrontation of Jesus. And I want to read the text. It's Luke chapter 6, verses 1 through 11. I guess the page number is up there too. Is it up there? Oh, it's not up there. Awesome. It's Luke chapter 6. It's in the New Testament. I'm going to read it. Now, another thing you should know about me, I am dyslexic. I am wickedly dyslexic. Yeah, my man. I may fumble words, so I will either fill it in, summarize, or paraphrase. Just know that that happens with me often. It's not because I disrespect the Word of God. It's just because it's just the way my brain works at this point in my life. I'm 48. It is what it is. On the Sabbath day, Jesus was walking through some grain fields. His disciples broke off heads of grain, rubbed the husks in their hand, and ate the grain. But some Pharisees said, why are you breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? Now, key word, harvesting. That's what they said. Jesus replied, haven't you read the scriptures of what David did and when he and his companions were hungry? They went to the house of God and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that are only for the priests, only the priests can eat. There it is, see? He gave some to his companions, and Jesus also added, the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. He's pointing out this. You missed the point. Look, these guys were having a snack. Okay? They were rubbing grain in their hand and having a snack. This was not harvesting. Harvesting is when you take a sickle to things and you chop them down. And in fact, we're going to talk about some of these things in a little bit, but I want to keep going and share some more thought because I want to get through the rest of this passage. So verse 6, it says this. On another Sabbath day, a man with a deformed hand was at the synagogue while Jesus was teaching. The teachers of the religious laws and the Pharisees were watching him closely. Got your eyes on you, Jesus. If he healed the man, they planned on accusing him of working on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew their thoughts. He said to the man with a deformed hand, come and stand right here in front of us all. So the man came forward and said to his critics, I have a question for you. Does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath? Or is it a day for doing evil? Is this a day to save life or to destroy it? He looked around at them one by one and said to them, hold out your hand. The man held out his hand and it was restored. At this, his enemies of Jesus were wild with rage and began to discuss what to do to him. Jesus, you're not behaving right. Don't you know this is the Sabbath? We don't do these things on the Sabbath. This is the problem of the behave right philosophy, is it becomes this legalistic, hardcore rule following. You can't bend this. You can't change this. This is how it's supposed to be. Here's the deal. Doing good was never a prohibition about the Sabbath. It was never said, oh, nope. Don't do that. Don't be good to people. Don't do nice things. Don't be kind. Don't rescue. Don't protect. It was never the law. Exodus 20, verses 8. So let me backtrack really, really fast because I want to give you some context of what the Sabbath is. Because some of you, you're like, I've heard it, we read about it, but I don't really understand it. And so I want to give you some context so you can go, oh, I get it. They're coming out of Egypt. They've been slaves for 400 years. God is about to bring them out with Moses. He does, and they get to this Mount Sinai. And this is what happens is they get given this gift. And here's what it says. It's literally the law about the Sabbath. Remember to observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy. You have 6 days each week for ordinary work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest, dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons or daughters, your male or female servants, your livestock, your foreigners living among you. For 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. That's why the Lord blessed the Sabbath and set it apart as holy. A couple thoughts and a couple observations about this. One, very specifically, the idea of work. These folks had been slaves, which means it was a 7 day work week every day, day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. How many of you are tired just thinking about that? Right? Like 40 hours is tough, man. Like, have you done my job? It's like, some of us just like, we need the 2 days. And so this was intended as a gift. In fact, the word Sabbath literally means rest. That's what it means. They've been slaves. They've been doing this. It was intended to be a gift. In fact, can I ask a question? And this is another one of my thoughts about this is, did God actually need the seventh day to rest? No, he didn't need it. He modeled it for us. He's all powerful, all knowing, almighty. Like he doesn't need to take a nap. I need naps. Jesus didn't, right? Let's talk about some of the things so the line is here. Do not work. So let's talk about that for just a second. Things like sowing, which means going and planting seeds. You guys live in the middle of almond groves. One, almond wood, by the way, side note, best barbecue wood on the planet. just so you know, I was Chef Justin prior to being Pastor Justin. This was my specialty, was Texas style barbecue. Yeah, I have a 20-foot Texas style smoker. Her name is Sophia. Yeah. She's been with me longer than I've been married to my wife, which should say something. So you understand what sowing and plowing and reaping means. And binding and threshing, winnowing. It's about breaking down wheat so you can actually eat it. Those kinds of things took work. Selecting, okay, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to select this. I'm going to do this. Like this one, not that one. This one, not that one. It was a process. It was a job. Sifting, kneading. Like we had to make bread by hand back in the day. That's hard work. You ever need bread? It's tough. Baking, okay, here's an interesting one. Kindling a fire. Now that means either lighting or extinguishing was considered work. But here's what happens. The Pharisees had taken that rule, that line of work over here, and they turned it into something else. In fact, when you read it, often you read this in the New Testament, in the Gospel specifically, where he says the law and traditions of the Pharisees. That word tradition, I'm going to give you some of those things right now. Because you're going to go, wait, what? Like, this is some of the nonsense that they took do not work and turned it into. The first one, here's their definition. Rabbis decreed, not only should you avoid prohibited or forbidden acts like work, but you must not do anything that, one, resembles the prohibited act or could be confused with the prohibited act. Two, is a habit linked to it. And three, usually leads to you performing the prohibited act. Does that just wear you out? It just wears me out. Like just thinking about that stuff. But let me give you some real hardcore examples of what their tradition. So work is here. We're going to step back now and tell you what the things that they said. One, ladies, you cannot add, or gentlemen, you can't add any fresh water to a vase of cut flowers. Sorry. That's considered sowing because more water could actively somehow cause the plant to grow more. Oh, you know what? You can't even make a bouquet of flowers because that's considered making a sheave. You can't separate good fruit from spoiled fruit. So if you have a fruit, how many of you have fruit baskets on your table? So if you find a bad apple in there, I'm sorry, on the Sabbath, you're out of luck. You just need to let that fruit bowl rot. Ugh, right? Ew. No thanks. You can't brush dried mud off your boots or pants because that's considered grinding. You can't cut your hair or your nails because that's considered shearing sheep or removing a covering off, or removing a covering. It's like considered shearing. So no clipping your nails on the Sabbath or getting your nails done on the Sabbath. Ladies, I have really bad news. No applying makeup on the Sabbath. It's considered dying. You can't braid your hair either, right? Like you can't even do that. Oh, here's another one. Let's say you have, hey, doctor orders, you got to come in. You need to get a blood test. Sorry. No blood tests. That's considered slaughtering. You can't, this is dumb. This one still blows my mind. You can't open or close an umbrella because it's considered building. Really? Like, now I'm so far away from the line that I'm back over here. You can't, oh, this is a great one. This is legit. This is still today. You cannot use the telephone or push a button on an elevator. Because it's considered possibly kindling a fire. So if I push the button on the elevator, it could create a spark, and thus I'm creating fire. Thus I'm working on the Sabbath. So if you go to Israel on the Sabbath, you will, if you step into the wrong elevator, it will literally stop at every floor, all the way up and all the way down, so that they do not inadvertently push a button and start a fire on the Sabbath. Yay! These sound fun, right? They completely missed the point. Completely, like, just sailed right over their head. Even the early church had disagreements between the Jews and the Gentiles on this issue, right? They This idea of behave right became kind of a problem because early in the church, what happened was some folks started celebrating on Sunday. Well, is Sunday actually the Sabbath? Is it the last day of the week? No, it's the first. And then you had these traditional Jews who would celebrate it on Saturday, and there became this conflict. You're not believing, you're behaving right. We're supposed to worship Jesus on Saturday, not Sunday. But why do we worship Jesus on Sunday? Anybody know? What? Yes, the resurrection. That's why we do it on Sunday. He was raised on a Sunday. Does it matter if we did it on a Saturday? No, it doesn't matter. In fact, Paul in Romans addresses this issue. He's like, look, we got to show deference to one another. This is a secondary issue that if you argue the believe right or the behave right, you are missing the invitation for relationship. God gave him this Sabbath to teach him these healthy rhythms of life. I love the word rhythm because, and I was talking to one of the music directors up here, and he says, I love that word rhythm because it reminds me of music. Exactly. Music has a rhythm to it. Sometimes it's more up-tempo, meaning you have a busier season going on in your life. Sometimes it's lower tempo, and things are a little different. The question becomes, is how do you find healthy rhythms when it's busy and when it's slow? That's the key. See, I think there's this idea of a difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Now, I want to talk about it because they were so fixated on the letter of the law and they were so afraid of accidentally crossing that line. What they did is they moved the line so far back that they're not even near it anymore. And it becomes the thing instead of doing good, instead of finding these healthy rhythms with God, instead of finding this intended rest for our souls, they made it a burden. In fact, that's the thing that Jesus was constantly just bashing heads with them about. Like, you guys are constantly making this harder. This isn't supposed to be that hard. They missed the real intent. Now, I want to say something about the spirit of law versus the letter of the law, really fast, because it's easy for us to start justifying ourselves with this. And I'll give you an example, and I know no one's story in this room, okay? I want to say that out loud. So if I push a button, I apologize. I really don't, but, here's the spirit of the law, or this concept when people justify sin, right? Well, we're about to get married in 3 months. We might as well just move in together because, you know, it's the spirit of the law and we're going to be doing this. So it's not that big a deal, but that's not God's heart. God's heart for us is to be celibate in our singleness until we say, I do. And so it's easy to go, oh, it's just the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law. And I'm not trying to say that because there is an important balance that we need to recognize, but it only comes from relationship with God and in His Word. This past June, I had a privilege. I was given a gift of what they call a sabbatical. You guys know what a sabbatical is? Yeah. Praise God. He needed it. At our church, if you've been on staff, full-time pastor for more than 5 years, you get a gift. They give us a sabbatical, and I was stoked. I own a Jeep, and I love to four-wheel drive, and I love going wheeling, and I love all that stuff. It's just kind of my thing. The guys, yeah. And so I had this plan. I was going to go out to the Lost Coast. If you know anything about this, it's a 108-mile Jeep trail right on the coast. And I was going to go cruise and just spend time with Jesus. It was going to be amazing. Now, it washed out, and so there was no way I was getting on the trail, unfortunately. But I had this expectation, like I had this idea that, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I'm going to go to this beach, and I'm going to be alone, and I'm going to have this like mountaintop experience with God. Like the Shekinah glory is going to come down, and He's just going to talk with me face to face. I cannot wait to do this. And I'm driving, and I'm just like, fired up about this relationship and this meeting and this time. And all of a sudden I have two stories just ripped through my head. This is always how God speaks to me, by the way. He uses his word and he reminds me of things that I've already learned, because there's every principle that you want to find about how to live a godly life is found in the Bible. It is. In fact, I do a challenge every year with the people of my church. New Year's Eve, I always ask to preach because I want people to read the Bible with me for the year. I've done it for the last 4 years. First year, I had like 20 people join me. Second year, I had like 35. Last year was 60-something. I did it this year, and I don't know if I'm going to do it again. Not because I don't want to, but because I have 207 people reading the Bible with me every day. My phone blows up on the daily basis. I'm going to comment about this and this and this and this. It's amazing, but I know that it's about being in the Word, and so I am all about being in the Word. So I go to this, I'm driving, and all of a sudden this story out of 2 Kings chapter 5, I hear the word Naaman. That's all I needed to hear, because all of a sudden my brain starts playing the story of Naaman. And if you don't know the story of Naaman, it can be found in 2 Kings chapter 5. It's this gentleman who is a Syrian, he's got leprosy. One of his servants sends him to Jerusalem. There's this prophet. His name is Elijah. I got to get it right. Yes, Elijah. Dang it. Did I get him backwards? I got him backwards again. Always. It's always the case. Elisha is the first one. So he goes to Elijah. Elisha. Ooh, remember what I said? I don't take myself that serious. Yeah, there we go. And he shows up. Elisha doesn't even come out. He sends his servant out. And he says, go dunk in the Jordan 7 times. And Naaman gets ticked. He gets upset. And his servant goes, this is me paraphrasing, wait a minute. If he had asked you to do something really hard, you'd have done it. He's just asking you to do the simple thing. Go dunk in the Jordan. Like, and he does, and he gets healed. But here's the takeaway. There's a principle there. Naaman had unrealistic expectations of how God was going to show up. And I went, ooh, got it. And then the second story was the guy that he mentored, Elijah, in 1 Kings 19. He has this amazing, battle with the prophets of Baal. And then all of a sudden, Jezebel threatens his life and he freaks out. And he takes off. And he gets to a point in his life where he's like, I just want to die. But he has this amazing experience with God. And then he hits like the lowest of lows. Talk about a weird rhythm. Talk about a rhythm that all of a sudden you have this emotional, spiritual high where you watch God do what? Fire down from heaven. Just consuming the thing, and then like even with water on, I mean, just blows his mind. And then all of a sudden, one threat from one person just wrecks him. He thinks he's alone, and he gets stuck in this weird loop. What does God tell him to do? Have a nap and a snack. It's in the text. Now, it may not say that. But I believe, here's my takeaway from that. Never underestimate the spiritual power of a nap and a snack. Just don't do it. So he goes, and he goes up on this mountain. God sends him the rest of the way, and there's all these things, right? There's this earthquake. This wind rips through. It's tearing trees apart. This earthquake happens. This fire happens. God's not in each one of these things. And all of a sudden, this still, small voice comes. And God said, I heard in my heart, he's like, you know, I'm going to meet you the same way I meet you every day. I'm going to meet you in the Word. And I'm going to meet you in the still, small voice. There isn't going to be a burning bush moment. I realized my expectations were off. See, my healthy rhythms, I just needed to hear what he wanted me. What was next? What's the next season look like? And the truth is, the next season actually prepared me for what was coming. I'm part of the Brady Bunch. Like, my childhood, I was one of six, two half sisters, three step, you know what I mean? Like, you know the story of the Brady Bunch by aging myself. My two biological sisters have both passed away within the last 2 years, and one of my stepsisters. So since 2021, I've lost three siblings. Yeah. But God was preparing me for that. Walking and getting my heart ready to be able to grieve and trust Him in the midst of it. See, what I needed was I needed this extended time with Jesus. That's what I needed. I needed a Sabbath rest. And I didn't understand that in my rhythms of life because I had these rhythms where I was doing daily time, which is super important. We call it chair time at Heights Church. If you don't have a language for that, man, I want to encourage you, figure out what you call it. Some people call it, oh, it's my quiet time. Some people call it their journaling time. But whatever it is, it's that daily time where you sit in the Word of God and then you take some time to pray. And I needed to figure that out. Like, I had that peace, but what I didn't have was something that God had shown us and modeled for us in the Bible. I didn't have a Sabbath rest. Now, it doesn't have to be a Sunday. Can I be honest for a second? It doesn't have to be a specific day because that's not what we're talking about. The invitation is friendship and partnership. Come be with me. Come do this thing with me. Come lean into this mission with me. That's the invitation that God has for us. It's not about me being legalistic. No, it must be Fridays from this time to this time, but it's an extended time where I'm listening and saying, God, what do you want for me to do in this mission? Is there somebody that you want me to talk to? Is there somebody that you want me to bring along in this process? I have this thing and I brought it with me because I love, okay, first of all, if you don't know what this is, it's a water pick. And you're thinking, that's a weird prop for a, it is. But it illustrates this so well. I'm like, I'm bringing it. I don't care. And I won't go into the story because we're running low on time, but it needs two things. It needs water. So every day, to use this thing correctly, I got to fill it with water. Fill a little water tank, stick it in my mouth, turn it on, do its thing. I got to do that. But every week, I have to recharge it. It requires a battery. It requires being recharged. And that's the picture. This is my chair time. It's the water that God puts into me every single day so that I can use it for His purposes, for His mission, for His process. But then I've got to recharge my batteries. And can I be clear about something for a second? I'm not talking about a vacation. In fact, I don't know how many people asked me when I went on my sabbatical, how was your vacation? And I'm like, it was great. I spent a lot of time with Jesus in the woods, in the mountains, sleeping in my Jeep. It was awesome. But I spent a lot of time with Him. It's like it really wasn't a vacation because how many of you have ever gone on vacation and gone, I need a vacation for my vacation? Where you're so tired when you get back, you're like, I need like three more days just to sleep and recover. I've been guilty of that, but that's not what I'm talking about. Healthy rhythms of life, and they challenge us to not only do our daily time, but find a place where you can go along and find some silence and some solitude. And the introverts amongst us just went, dude, that sounds awesome. If you're an extrovert like me, you want me to do what? You want me to go away and be alone? Like no people? That's a terrible plan. But I have to do it because here's what I know. It's helpful for me. I need it to recharge my soul. Maybe, and I'm going to wrap up with this. Here's my challenge. And here's my question for you. What are your rhythms? Some of us just go about life because it's the next day and the next day and the next day, and we never actually take a moment to think about our rhythms. Because we're so in the flow of life, we can't stop to smell the roses. Can I tell you something? If your busy season is so busy that you can't see an end for it, it's not a season, it's your life. It's the way you rhythmed and set your life. So my encouragement is, man, stop doing some stuff. Say no to things. It's okay. I say no to stuff all the time because I want to make sure that my rhythms are healthy. That's what I want. I want healthy rhythms in my life. And don't get me wrong, I don't do this perfectly. In fact, as I was reading through this, I went, oh, Lord, I'm sorry. I've let this rhythm piece go, haven't I? So I put some rhythm back up here. Here's where I'm going to put it. And I put it in my calendar because I live by my calendar. Here's what I would encourage. If you do this and you want to try this Sabbath thing and the Sabbath rest or whatever this looks like, here's some suggestions for you. Consider it an extended time of prayer and reflection. Turn off your phone, the TV, anything else that causes you distraction, and go somewhere to be with Jesus. Whether it's a closet, a room, the woods, the middle of an almond grove when they're not harvesting and doing stuff. I don't know. Find a spot. Go and away from people and go be with him. And then ask these four questions. Lord, what do you see in me that you love? You know why I start there? I need encouragement. And so do you. You need an encouragement. You and I need to remember our identity first. That I am loved, son or daughter from the King. Once I lean there, everything else is gravy. It's easy from that point forward. The second question is this. Lord, is there bitterness in my heart towards anyone? Forgive them. Lord, what healthy rhythms do you want me to start? And what rhythms do I need to stop? And Lord, is there something that you want me to learn from your word? That's my challenge to you. My encouragement to you today. Let me pray. Father, I just thank you so much for Covenant Grove. Lord, I see your spirit in the faces of your people. And Lord, I know that the invitation for a Sabbath rest is you're drawing them into friendship and partnership with you. So God, I pray that they would take this and take it to heart, not because some preacher preached it, but because they want to know you more closely. God, I just thank you for the opportunity and the privilege to serve you. And I pray for your blessing here. In Jesus' name, amen.